Thank you, Rabbi Lichter. Thank you all to everyone for coming out. I know it's there's a lot of excitement around Lag BaOmer time. I'm sure there are other tempting activities that a person could want to partake in this evening. But I see that, you know, those of you who chose to attend the shir as opposed to a bonfire, I noticed on the parochas a beautiful bonfire already in the background. So if the shir is not up to par, you'll certainly stare at the bonfire and enjoy the flames of the bonfire as well. I just want to thank Rabbi Lichter. He was really the one who was behind bringing me in. And, you know, as he pointed out, we've been friends for a while now. And I'm very, you know, just very thankful to him for taking the time to invite me to share words of Torah with you. I also want to, at this time, I guess, offer a disclaimer that the style of Torah that I'm going to present, or Rabbi Lichter, I guess, alluded to it, but I hope it's something that that will be sweet to everyone here. I know it's a style that not everyone is used to hearing, but I think certainly for Lag BaOmer, it's only appropriate that we delve into some of the more deep areas of Torah, the deeper waters of Torah, and God willing, I'll be able to do so with clarity. So I'd like to start by sharing with you a story. You know, for the Jewish people, stories are not something we treat very lightly. The Kotzker Rebbe, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, once said that, you know, someone once approached him and said, the chutzpah asked him, how did you become the Kotzker Rebbe? What inspired you to attain such greatness, such godliness for a human being in this world? It was unbelievable the levels of holiness that he had attained. And he attributed that, he said, you know, the truth is, it all goes back to one of the Rebbeim I had when I was in Cheder. He says, he used to tell us the most wonderful stories about tzaddikim, about their greatness, about their loftiness. And he said, and that really painted a picture for me of what I wanted to become one day. You know, so as Jews, when we hear stories, it's more than just a nice idea, a nice little fairy tale. It's something that could shape the course of our lives, and it can give us the inspiration to go forward in the way that we need. And the truth is, it's not only the contemporary type of stories that the Kotzker Rebbe was hearing, you know, stories of great tzaddikim from his time and in the times immediately before him, but the truth is, so much of Jewish life is built on stories. The Torah is full of stories. It's not just the book of laws that tells us, you know, do this, don't do this. The Torah is full, you know, Sefer Bereishis especially, but throughout the Torah, there's fascinating stories, so much rich depth and life to the Torah. And the same thing is true if you go into the Torah Sheba'al Peh. If you look in the Gemara, the accounts of the strange agadotas are for many the most interesting parts of the Torah. The stories that are deep and mystical and require further thought and further study. Those are very often the most exciting parts of the Torah. And the truth is, if you sit down to even learn, to begin to learn Torah Sheba'al Peh, you look at the first Masechta, Maseches Brachos. So of the five Mishnayos in the first parak, three of them tell stories. Clearly, you know, clearly Chazal, our sages, treated the story as something very important, something worth sharing and worth recounting. So, you know, again, as Jews, the concept of a story is more than it's more than just something nice for us to think about, but it could really change the way that we look at the world. The Rizhna Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhin, was also one of the early Hasidic masters, so he once said the following. He said, in the times of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidus, he says, whenever there was a trouble, whenever there was a difficulty, a misfortune for the Jewish people, so the Baal Shem Tov knew with his powers, his Torah powers, he would go into a certain forest, and he would take with him a candle, and he would take with him a sitter, and he would light the candle in a certain spot in the forest, and he would recite certain tefillos with certain Kabbalistic intents, and he was able to avert the difficulty that was besieging the Jewish people. He says, a short while after that, when the Baal Shem Tov was no longer around, his disciple and successor, the Maggid of Mezrich, says, you know, I'm not on the level of my master. I'm not able to do exactly what he did. What I am able to do is I'm also able to go into the special place in the forest, and I'm able to light the candle, and I daven a little bit on my own level, but I'm certainly not able to do it in the way, with the Kabbalistic intent that my great master, Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, was able to do. A generation later, the great Rav Moshe Leib of Sasov, another one of the great Hasidic Rebbe's, said, I can't even live up to that level. What I can do is I can go to the forest, and I can light the candle. He says, I can't, you know, my tefillos don't even cut it. So says Rav Yisrael of Rizhin, he says, listen, you know, here he says, and we're only talking a few generations down the line, but he said, for me, I don't know where the forest is. If I did, I'd light the candle, but I don't even know where to go. I certainly can't daven, certainly not with the Kabbalistic intent. But all I can do, and all I can hope to do, is tell the story of those people who came before us, and what they were able to do. And in the merit of sharing that story, sometimes that's all we need to get the salvation that we need. So I think as Jews, you know, the concept of a story, whether it's a physical salvation, as they were describing, or a spiritual salvation, for a Jew to be uplifted by a story, you know, the power of a story is something that, that again, we take very seriously. So now I think it's time that I should probably get to the story that I want to share with you. And I'd like if everyone could try to listen to the story with Torah ears. What that means is try, you know, you'll see it's not a Jewish story per se. It's not a Torah story. It doesn't involve any great tzaddik, although it involves a hero in his own way. And I want you to try to understand and think about maybe what the religious significance of this story might be. You know, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov used to always say that there's a big difference between the way a Jew tells a story and a non-Jew tells and listens to a story. A non-Jew, when he tells their child a story, so he's telling them a story to put them to bed. It's a bedtime story. It helps them fall asleep. But a Jew, when we share stories, it's to wake ourselves up. So let's share a story and see if we can maybe arouse ourselves a little bit and wake ourselves up. And let's see if we can connect it in some way to the themes of Lag BaOmer. So the story goes back to 1949. The story takes place in Montana. And there was a massive forest fire at the time. And a group of firefighters, a parachute brigade of firefighters, were dropped into the middle of this tremendous inferno. You can imagine the blaze all around. It was like a dry grass fire, the type of fire that could spread very quickly and very dangerously out of control. And this group of very skilled firefighters were dropped, you know, into the flames, so to speak, to do whatever they could to try to gain control of this fire. And at one point, the fire started to spread to the point that they realized they were in serious danger. The fires were closing in around them. And again, these fires can move 50, 60 miles an hour. And the fires were really closing in fast. So the firefighters started to run. And there was a steep incline, and if they could somehow get over this incline to the other side of the crest, that would be the safety zone. But to outrun these types of fires was an unreasonable, you know, challenge. And they started to run. And as they're running, their commander, a fellow by the name of Wagner Dodge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, put the following brilliant idea into his mind. He took matches out of his pocket. Why he had matches to begin with is a good question. But he took matches out of his pocket, and he lit the dry grass in front of him, causing the fire to spread up the slope in front of him. So now, picture the scene. He has a fire racing at him from behind. He has another fire spreading right in front of him. Right? And what he did after that was, as the fire continued to spread up the slope, he stepped into the now burnt out area, and he lay down on the ground, in the area where, you know, where the fire was moving up ahead of him. So he created for himself, so to speak, a little pocket within the inferno. And he called to his men, he said, "Everyone lie down with me." Now, it's, you know, you can only imagine what was going through their mind at the time. Either they thought he was totally nuts, or they didn't hear him over the roar of the flames, and only one other person joined him. The other firefighters continued to flee up the hill, hoping to escape, and unfortunately, only he and this one other guy survived, and not only did they survive, they got out nearly untouched. The flames passed right around them. And this technique became known as an escape fire. And nowadays, you know, he changed the history of firefighting. This is one of the most basic techniques that they train someone who's training for fire services for these types of things. This is one of the most basic techniques of survival, where you create a pocket for yourself so that the flames operate right around you, they move right around you, and you stay within the fire, safe in your own little escape fire. So when I read this story, I was trying to think, you know, what could be the religious significance of this story? And from Torah, you know, as Torah Jews, what can we take away from this story? And I think the answer is very simple. I think, you know, the fires of this world are very dangerous. Right? The lures of secular society, the temptations of the secular world can sometimes be very fast and very out of control. And it's very easy to get caught up in it. And if we think for a second that we're fast enough or smart enough, we're going to be able to outrun these fires, unfortunately, I think the reality is otherwise. I don't think it's possible for a Jew, no matter how strong his convictions are, I don't think it's possible to outrun the flames of the world in which we live. But there is one way for us to survive. And it could be, and maybe I'm being overstepping boundaries by positing this, but it could be this is the only way to survive when one finds himself in such a situation. And that's creating a fire within the fire. Right? What does it mean to create a fire within the fire? When a Jew turns inward and he lights the fire inside of himself, when he arouses his neshama, which is a fire, it's a spark inside of us, a piece of God inside of us. God is compared to a fire, right? Kod v'ray ke'ish no Hashem. Hashem says, I'm like a fire. If we're able to fight fire with fire, as the expression goes, when we light that fire inside of us, that may be the best and arguably the only way for a Jew to survive. So that's really what I'd like to speak about this evening. How can we become, as Jews, more connected Jews, more pnimius Jews, internal Jews, Jews who feel that we live really with that fire for Avodas Hashem. Now, I don't want anyone to take my message the wrong way. I don't want anyone to chas v'shalom think that I'm criticizing or saying that the case is otherwise. You know, I enjoyed the davening here this evening. I enjoyed the Divrei Torah. And I'm sure that every member of this shul and the Jewish people at large, we all deep down inside, we'd love to, and hopefully we actualize, we act as Jews who are on fire, who are passionate about our Avodas Hashem. But I know just for myself that there are many times in my life where I feel that technically I'm going through the motions, I'm doing the right things, as far as the actions of service of God, but my heart is sometimes not really there. Right? And it's a sad feeling sometimes when I feel that, you know, I'm doing my Judaism more than I am my Judaism, and I'm really living my Judaism. I saw an article, my wife showed me an article a couple weeks ago, where this woman was looking for a husband. She was trying to describe herself. You know, and in the world that we live in, people like to define themselves. I'm modern Orthodox. I'm a little more than modern Orthodox. I'm very ultra Orthodox. I'm a little to the left. This woman decided to describe herself in the following fashion. She says, you know, I wouldn't call myself Jewish, but I would say that I'm Jewish, right? I'm Jewish. You know, like this gender is brownish, right? I'm Jewish. And while I feel, you know, I truly feel sorry for that woman that she saw her Judaism as, you know, something that's kind of, you know, hanging in the balance. It could go either way, right? I took her message to her and I said, that's really, it's a good muster to ask ourselves. Do we see ourselves as Jewish? Do we see Judaism as the center and the focus of our lives? Or are we Jewish? Is it just something that, you know, when it's convenient, we try to squeeze it in a little here, a little davening here, a little learning here, a little chesed here, but it doesn't become the center of our life. There's a well-known story with the Brisker Rav, I'm sure some of you have heard it, that a fellow from America traveled to Eretz Yisrael to meet with the Brisker Rav. And he came in and they were schmoozing for a while, and the Brisker Rav turned to him after a while and he said, what do you do? So the guy says, I'm a lawyer. Okay, conversation continues, they're talking, different things. After a little while, the Brisker Rav says to him again, so tell me, what do you do? So thinking that the Brisker Rav, one of the sharpest minds of the last 50 years, wasn't so swift, so very slowly and, you know, nice as I am a lawyer, right? I am part of a law firm in New York City. So the Brisker Rav, obviously, he was no fool. Anyone who's tried to study his words understands that he was obviously a very deep thinker. So he said back to him, he said, that's not how a Jew answers the question. He says, when Yonah was on the run, he was leaving Tarshish, and he was on a boat with a bunch of sailors, and the ship was shaking, right? And they're trying to figure out who's the cause of this problem. And they ask him, you know, who are you? Right? What are you? Ma malachtecha? What is your profession? What does Yonah respond? Ivri anochi, I'm a Jew by profession. Es Hashem Elokei Hashamayim ani yorei. And if you want to know my specialty, my field within, you know, Judaism, my specialty is Yirat Shamayim. Right? That's what he responded. I'm a Jew by profession, and my area of expertise is Yiras Hashem. As Hashem Elokei Hashamayim and Yirei. So I think that's the challenge that we have to ask ourselves. Do we see ourselves again? Is Ivri Anochi my response when someone says, what do you do? Right? Now what do you do for a living? Now what do you do for Parnassa? But if someone asks you, what are you? How do you define yourself? Would you say, I'm a Jew? Is that the first response? Or again, is Judaism something where we're more Jewish than Jewish? He's a well-known speaker from Baltimore. Refran once told this story, and he said a businessman came over to him a couple weeks later, and he said, Refran, you know, I want you to know I was very inspired by your story with the Brisker Rav and the lawyer from New York. He says, you know, I run a very big business, and I made myself a plaque, a paperweight that I keep on my desk that says Ivri Anochi. And he says, whenever I have a big client, I'm having a big meeting, or I'm on an important phone call, I make sure that that plaque is very clearly placed before my eyes, so that I remind myself, Ivri Anochi. So that was a guy, you know, who really got the message. He internalized the message of being Jewish and not Jewish. But again, I don't want anyone to think that I'm being critical of our mitzvah observance. And if I can, I'd like to show you, and we'll take a look at the source sheet now, three proofs that in fact this idea really does exist. that technically you can be going through the motions, you can be doing all the right things on the surface, but if your heart's not really there, then something is terribly lacking. So let's take a look at source number one. The pasuk describes in Parshas Vayishlach that Yaakov sends ahead messengers, malachim, angels, maybe real angels, maybe messengers, to his brother Esav, who he hasn't seen in a very long time. And he says to him, he makes mention of the fact that he's been living with Lavan, in Lavan Garti. So let's take a look at source number two. We'll get right into it. Let's take a look at the Rashi in source number two. Rashi has two explanations. Why is Yaakov declaring before his brother, "I'm Lavan Garti. I've been living with my brother Lavan"? Why do we need to know this? Why does Esav need to know this? His brother's very angry at him. They've had a family feud for many years. So why is he declaring this? So Rashi says, "Davar Acher," in source number two, "Garti, Davar Acher, Garti, Bigamatria Taryag." Garti is the numerical equivalent. The word Garti has the numerical equivalent of 613. Alluding to what? The 613 mitzvos that we have as Jews. Klomar, that is to say, Im Lavan HaRasha Garti, I've been living with this terribly wicked individual, Vitaryag Mitzvos Shamarti, and I've still kept all 613 mitzvos, Velo Lamadti Mimasav HaRayim, and I haven't learned from his bad ways. Now there's a very obvious question that, you know, I can call it obvious now that I saw it written somewhere, but I never thought of this question. Right? The end of the Rashi seems a little bit redundant. I've been living with Lavan, he's a very bad person, but don't worry, I still keep all 613 mitzvahs. I haven't given up one bit of my Jewish observance. But what's the end of the Rashi? And I haven't learned from his bad ways? Doesn't that seem extra? Obviously, if you keep all 613 mitzvahs, you haven't learned from his bad ways. So says Rav Ruderman, the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Ruderman Zatzal, I saw Rabbi Zev Leff from Eretz Yisrael, a very popular speaker, makes the same point in one of his books. He says, what you see very clearly is that you could technically be doing all 613 mitzvos, but you could still be not a fine person, not a person who's really living the Jewish ideal. So that's why Yaakov declares before Esav, not only have I kept all 613 mitzvos, but I've done it in a way that I haven't even learned from his negative ways. Because again, you could be within the framework of the halacha, the letter of the law, but totally be lacking in the area of the spirit of the law. Okay, I'll share with you a second example, or perhaps a second proof to this idea. Right, the pasuk tells us in source number three, a person has an obligation to declare that he's paid up. Right, we have certain obligations with our produce as far as giving percentages to Kohanim and Levim. So a person has to make a declaration at various points. It's called vidui meiser. He's declaring, verbally declaring, confessing that he's given all of his proper tithes. And he says the following, V'amarta lefnei Hashem lokecha, you declare, bi'arti ha-kodesh min ha-bayis, I've given away everything that's expected of me to give away, and I've given to the Levi, and the Ger, and the Yasum, kichol mitzvasecha. I've done like all of your mitzvos. So what's the kichol mitzvasecha? I've done like all of your mitzvos, right? It sounds like this person really did all of the mitzvos. But again, the question is, yeah, technically I've gone through the motions, right? I've given what I was expected to give, from the letter of the law, but is it really the way God wanted me to give it? It's kechol mitzvah secha. Can I say with confidence that I really fulfilled the mitzvah? Did I do it with the heart? You know, a person sometimes, we keep Shabbos, right? We keep maybe the letter of the law, but is my Shabbos really Shabbostic? Right? We daven, right? Many of us were here for Marv tonight. We daven. But did we really speak to God? Was it an opportunity to connect to the Creator of the world? And that's really the challenge of this pasuk, that our mitzvah should be kol mitzvah secha, not kichol mitzvah secha, like the mitzvah, but not exactly there. Now, these two interpretations that I've shared with you, they're really later interpretations. They're more modern commentaries make, you know, point out these ideas. And the truth is, we really find it even in earlier sources. Right? Very often, it's good to look to how the earlier great individuals, commentaries of the Torah, interpreted certain psukim to see if this idea is really, you know, true to the essence of the Torah. So if we turn to one final source, a Ramban from this past week's Parsha. The Torah says, with regard to the holidays, Yiyeh Lachem Shabbason, right? That we need to declare a Shabbason. It needs to be a festive holiday. So the Ramban says exactly this idea. You know, people sometimes say that as long as I'm within the letter of the law, you know, this concept of being Shabbos dick or Yom Tov dick, of having, you know, this feeling of Shabbos, if it's kosher, it's kosher. Why do I have to worry about if it, you know, if it seems right, if it doesn't seem right? The truth is the Torah itself expects us to do it in such a way that our heart is really there. And that's what the Ramban says in source number four. He says, Yiyeh Lachem Shabbason, Shiyeh Yom Shvisa Lanoach Bo. Shabbos and all the holidays, really referring to the other holidays, are a day of rest. V'nira li sha'medrash hazeh lomar shenitztavinu min haTorah lios lanu menucha b'yom tov afilu midvarim she'ina malacha. Says the Ramban in this past week's parsha, on Shabbos it's not just enough, and on Yom Tov it's not just enough to do what the Torah expects, but it has to be a real day of rest. Because technically, as the Ramban, we won't read it inside, but the Ramban goes on to explain, technically, from a Torah perspective, there's a lot of I could be very busy on Shabbos. He says, if you live in an enclosed city where there's an Erev, so technically I can move all my, I'm moving, God willing, from Teaneck to Bergenfield in a couple weeks, so I'm busy packing up. Technically, it would not be a violation of the halacha if I were to spend all Shabbos moving my boxes from one house to the next. Technically, if on a Torah level, that'd be fine. But clearly, says the Ramban, that undermines the entire spirit of what Shabbos is supposed to be, a day of rest. So again, you just see these three ideas where a person is able to really, to be reminded by these psukim that it's not just enough to be within the letter of the law, a person has to be also within the spirit of the law. Someone once came to the Kotzker Rebbe and asked, he said, I don't understand. He says, Judaism is the real religion, right? I hope that all of us in this room are convinced of that. Judaism is the real religion. It's the religion of emes. It's the religion of truth. He says, so why is it that Judaism loses so many of its own people, and so many people just don't care about it? And other religions, which are in reality false, they gain so much popularity, and they have such a following, and not only do they not lose their constituents, they actually gain people. So said the Kotzker Rebbe, he said, you know why? He says, I'll tell you why. He says, the difference is, we may have the religion of emes, the religion of truth, but unfortunately we practice it as if it's falsehood. And they may have the religion of falsehood, but they practice it with such a love and a passion as if it's truth. And unfortunately, I think the Kotzker Rebbe's words are very true. That sometimes, as much as we know Torah is true, we become so comfortable with it that we don't challenge ourselves to make it a part of our life. It becomes just a natural process for us, and not something that I do with an excitement and with a passion. As a teacher of high school boys, some of them are in the room, so I get the privilege of hearing very interesting questions sometimes, interesting suggestions. So one of my students, who's not in the room, who will remain nameless, said to me recently, in all sincerity, he said, Rebbe, I have a very good idea. I said, okay, what is it? He says, it's a difficult financial climate right now. People are really struggling, and different schools, unfortunately, are cutting back. People are losing their jobs. It's a very tough time that we find ourselves in. And he said to me, in all sincerity, he said, I think maybe we should suggest, Rabbi Adler, he's the principal, maybe we should stop having report cards. The paper, the ink, to print the report cards. It's a big expense. The envelopes to mail the report cards. It's a big expense, and maybe by email, right? I'm sure that's what Rabbi Adler would have responded, right? But it's a big expense, and it's something the school. Maybe we can just have learning lishma. So I said, that's a very nice suggestion. I'm not sure how sincere your suggestion is. But it got me thinking. I said, imagine if we could have report cards in Judaism. Right? I mean, we go through so many years of life, hopefully doing Torah and mitzvahs, and we have no clue. We come out of it having absolutely no clue how we're doing. You get to Shemayim after 120 years, God willing, and it's a shock, and God says, the whole time you were like a little off. Well, maybe you could have given me an update, send me a text message. Certainly we have technology nowadays to be in touch with the creator of the world, right? So the truth is, we really do have one way to check in. There is a test that a person can take, and I describe it as a test because the piece that we're about to read, the author himself describes it as an actual test. And that the words come from the Kedushas Levi, or Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, talking about the third generation of Hasidus. And he says there is a test if a person wants to know how he's doing overall, to kind of gauge where he's holding in his relationship with the creator of the world, he can take the following test. Let's take a look at source number 5, and it's a beautiful idea. He says on the Pasuk, the very last end of Parshas Mishpatim, it's his last piece in his Sefer on Parshas Mishpatim, Umari Kvod Hashem Ke'esh Ocheles, that the honor of God was like a raging fire. And he explains as follows. He says, "Dehine adam b'avodasa l'Hashem Yisbarach." When a person serves God, b'Torah u'b'mitzvos, mivitanu gadol l'mal. See, sometimes we forget that the things that we do, we really make Hashem happy. Hashem wants nothing. Hashem didn't need us, right? He didn't really need to create this world. He created it because there's a certain joy that he gets when he sees that we're doing a good job, and he wants. If we could imagine such a thing, we give him a pleasure when we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Ukesha Adam wrote in line 2. Ukesha Adam wrote a leidem Hashem Yisbarach Yishlo Tanim Mevodaso. And if you want to know specifically, how is my service of God, right? God, generally you're interested in what the Jews have to offer, but how am I on a personal level doing? So he says, Habachinu Hu Alzeh.
the following test can be taken. Im adam roa shalibo boer ke'esh. If a person sees that his heart is on fire, right? Umislaiv tamid lavodoso. And we're constantly looking for more opportunities to serve him. We're not looking for ways to get around the law, but we're looking for ways to obligate ourselves in the service of God. And he has a very strong longing and a desire to serve the master of the universe. He says that's a guarantee. And this was a person who certainly served God with tremendous passion. I wasn't planning on telling any stories about him, but the stories about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditch's passion in serving God, they would say he would, you know, on Pesach, they say he would get up, so he'd take the matzah in his hand and he'd stand up and he would just collapse to the floor, you know, rolling on the floor. We can't even imagine. This was not an act of piety. This was a person who was sincerely so in love with the mitzvos that he just, when he was involved in a mitzvah, he would lose control. They say that one time, when he went to take his lulav and esrog on the morning of Sukkot, he had the lulav and esrog in a glass display case. He was so excited to do the mitzvah, he literally put his hand straight through the glass and pulled it out. His mind was not in this world. And again, these are levels that are maybe a little out of our league. But at least this idea of having the desire to do more and more is something we can strive for. And he concludes that when we do this, he says, this is the pshat in the pasuk. Umare kavod Hashem, if you want to know if you're bringing honor to God, the kavod Hashem, is ke'esh ocheles. If your heart's on fire to serve God, that's a sure sign, he says, that you're moving in the right direction. So now let's see if we can tie it into Lag Bomer. Let's see if we can tie it into the great message of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, whose yahrzeit, and according to many, whose birthday, we also commemorate tonight. Now, we have an idea that Hashem always completes the life of a tzaddik on the day that he's born is the same day that he died, showing that they live very complete lives. So many hold that today is not only the day that he passed away, but it's the day that he was born, and it's really it's a tremendous celebration for the Jewish people. And I think Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is one of the expert teachers in this area. He teaches us how to uncover that spark within ourselves. As Rabbi Yudin alluded to earlier, you know, what makes the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai very different is that it's a celebration, right? Generally, a yahrzeit is coupled with some sadness, but tonight it's a pure celebration. But tomorrow it's a pure celebration. And what exactly are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, on his deathbed, revealed to us the secrets of the Torah. And in doing so, he revealed the secrets of the world. And we know that when God created the world, he looked in the Torah to create the world. The Torah is the blueprint of the world. So when we understand the Torah in all of its depth, so then we understand all of creation in all of its depth. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed to us, the most esoteric, deepest, Kabbalistic sections of the Zohar, of his holy work. This is what was revealed at the end of his life. Now, as a Rebbe, again, I often hear from my students that some areas of Torah are more interesting, some are deep, some are you know, very profound, and other areas are a little more dry and a little more boring. But what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai taught the world is that it's not the case. That all areas of Torah have tremendous, tremendous depth, and often if we don't see that depth, if we're not able to feel the depth and the deep significance of the things that we do, it's usually our fault. It's usually not the Torah's fault. In fact, there's a Yerushalmi that says on the pasuk "Ki lo davar reku mikem," right? It's not an empty thing. The Yerushalmi reads the pasuk very interestingly. "Ki lo davar reku," it's not an empty thing, and if it's empty, it's mikem. It's from you. It's your fault. If you're not feeling it, if something's lacking in your connection to the Torah, very often it's our fault and not the Torah's fault. And I'll explain this idea with a mashal. There's a beautiful sefer called Madregas HaAdam. It was written by the altar of Nevardik. And he gives the following mashal in his introduction. He says, imagine you've never seen an airplane before. And you're walking with your friend outside. And all of a sudden, your friend points to the sky and he says, hey, look, an airplane. And you see this little dot, you know, zipping through the sky. And your friend says, you see that? That's called an airplane. Okay, you know, a little dot, called an airplane, great. Your friend then says to you, you know, there's people up there. And now you're thinking, oh boy, you know, what did my friend have for lunch today, right? What do you mean there's people up there? There's no people in that little speck in the sky. He says, no, there's hundreds of people up there. In that speck, there are hundreds of people. So you say, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, not only that, there are people who are sleeping, people who are eating, walking around, talking to people, listening to music, watching a movie. He says, you know, really, I got to find some new friends. I really don't know what you're saying. And as the plane gets closer and closer, you start to realize that your perspective was completely wrong. That tiny little floating speck in the sky is in fact quite massive. It's only because we were very far from it that we didn't perceive it as such. So says the altar in the Vardik, it's the exact same thing with the Torah. Right? When a person is far from the Torah, when he hasn't engaged the Torah and come close to the Torah, so very often you say, there's no way it can have all of that, you know, depth to it. There's no way it's as big as you describe it. But the more you get closer and closer to the Torah, and that's exactly what Shimon Bar Yochai did, he got as close to Torah as a person could possibly come. When a person gets closer and closer to Torah, he starts to see that in fact, it's a lot bigger than maybe it seemed on the surface. So now the question is as follows. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed this deep secrets, Kabbalistic secrets of the Torah. Great. What does it have to do with us? Right? I know for myself, I can't speak for my father, but I know for myself that I certainly have never studied the Zohar in a steady fashion. I certainly haven't looked, if I've seen pieces quoted here and there, I certainly haven't looked at the most difficult sections, which is exactly what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was teaching his students, the Idra Rabbah, the Idra Zuta, the big assembly, the small assembly, different groups of students. He taught really the most deep esoteric things in the world. And the question is, so then why is Lag BaOmer celebrated by all Jews? Right? It's a holiday that you find Jews who are maybe not so connected throughout the year. If you go to Meiron, tonight and tomorrow, you'll see a wide range of Jews. From the very religious to those people who are just there for the party. And really, what do they have a connection to this party? This is not their party. This party should be reserved for those people who have mastered the revealed areas of Torah and have now begun to explore the deeper, most, you know, Kabbalistic, esoteric areas of Torah. So how is Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's message, relevant to us? And I think the answer comes from the Zohar itself. If you take a look at source number 6, the Zohar tells us the following rule, and it's a very beautiful idea. Zohar says the Taninan were taught Gimel, Dargan, Inun. These three levels, Miskashrin, Dabida. These three levels are all deeply intertwined. What are these three levels? What are these three concepts that all come together? So says the Zohar, the writings of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Kutchabrichu, God, Oraisa, the Torah, V'Yisrael. God, the Torah, and the Jewish people are all one. There's a certain oneness to all of them. And if all year round we accept the fact that God is endlessly deep, let's take that as grand, you know, take that as a given. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed to us that the other two sections of this you know, three ply cord are also equally deep. That Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed to us the Torah is endlessly deep. No matter how shallow you think certain areas are, yeah, I have a grasp on this entire area. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed to us there's a lot more depth than you think. And the same thing is true with the third dimension, the Jewish people. Very often we look at ourselves and we say, you know, I'm not really cut out for greatness. And that depth that I see maybe by other Jews certainly is nothing that I can hope to attain myself. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai taught us is that it's just the opposite. That every Jew, just like every piece of Torah is tremendously deep, every Jew has tremendous depth to that individual. And the whole message of Lag BaOmer is to try to actualize that potential. That dormant potential, that fire within ourselves, that through much of our lives and much of the year lays quiet, the goal of Lag BaOmer is to stoke those flames and to really bring out that potential. I don't know if people have noticed, but if you look, when you count Sfiras HaOmer every night, so look at any Siddur, after the Sfira, it says, there's a column that says Sfira. Right? The Sfira. What is the Sfira? So again, it's really beyond the discussion of what we're discussing tonight, but just very simply, there's a concept that because God is so infinitely great, God is described in the Kabbalah as an Or Ein Sof, an infinite light, and there's no way for us to really interact with it. So what God did was He diluted Himself, so to speak, He funneled Himself through 10 filters, and we call those the 10 Sfiros. And during the 7 weeks of Lag BaOmer, we're working on the 7 lower attributes of God, the 7 Midos of Hashem. So for example, the first week, you'll notice, it talks about Chesed. Chesed Sheba Chesed, Gvura Sheba Chesed. What that means is we're working on the attribute of kindness. Right? It's a week to focus on trying to develop that trait. Just like God is kind, you have to also be kind. The second week is called Gvura, strength. And strength by Jews doesn't mean, you know, big muscles and going to the gym. Strength means inner strength. A person who's in control of his passions, who's in control of his desires. That's what we work on the second week. So what is tonight's Sfira? If you look, open up an Arch Girl Siddur. What is tonight's Sfira? Hod Shebehod. Right? The glory of glory. What does that mean? Well, what does that mean? The glory of glory. Right? We were talking about it's a very special night. But what does that mean? It's the glory of glory. What exactly are we, what's so glorious about tonight? So the answer is as follows. If you take a look at source number 7, the Gemara says, this night, Hod Shebehod, what is the concept of Hod? The Gemara tells us in Brachos, Hod Zu Beis HaMikdash, that the Hod is a reference, the word Hod, in the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim, is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. After all, isn't that our glory? Isn't that God's glory, His home in this world? So many Svarim point out, if the Beis HaMikdash is described as Hod, as a place of glory, so what's the Hod Shebahod? What's the glory of the glory? What's the most glorious place within the Beis HaMikdash? I think it's obvious. The answer would be the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? The innermost sanctum where the Kohen Gadol goes but once a year on Yom Kippur. So now let's try to connect it to ourselves. It could be that just as Hod Shebahod represents the Beis HaMikdash in place, in the physical Beis HaMikdash, so too there's a Hod Shebahod inside of every Jew. The Arizal says that there are 10 levels of Kedusha starting from Eretz Yisrael, leading them up as you get closer and closer to the Beis HaMikdash and eventually to inner courtyards and further in until you get to the Kodesh Kedusha. That's level 10. That's the deepest place in the world. And the Arizal says we have a concept that there are 10 chambers within a person's heart. Right? There are 10 chambers within a person's heart. So the Hod Shebahod, just like it exists in the Beis HaMikdash, it exists inside of every single Jew. There's a secret potential. When Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai uncovered the secrets of the Torah, he was uncovering the secret potential inside of every single one of us. And that's exactly what we're celebrating in Lag BaOmer. And that's why Lag BaOmer is relevant to every single Jew. It's a time for us to accept upon ourselves to try to bring out some of that potential. To find the our own Kodesh HaKadoshim inside of our hearts. And there's a place inside of every one of our hearts that's completely free of sin. Just like Yom Kippur is the day where the Jewish people are free of sin, where we reach the levels that the angels aspire to, there's a place inside of every Jew that always remains free of sin, regardless of how religious you are or how irreligious you are. And that we see in source number 8. The Pasuk Ketilim tells us, "Va'od ma'at ve'ein rasha." If you go a little deeper, then there's no wickedness. And the Sfarim explained that this is talking about every Jew. That if you look deeper and deeper inside a Jewish heart, no matter how much on the surface you might look at this person and say, he's the farthest thing from godliness and holiness, if you look a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper, when you uncover the Hod Shebahod, the glory of that individual, you'll find that in fact it's completely pure and completely shining. And Lag BaOmer is the opportunity for us to bring that to the surface. I think this idea, it's really one of the greatest impediments to our spiritual growth. The fact that we don't believe that we have a Kodesh Kadashim inside of us. We forget sometimes who we are. Right? We lose sight of who the Jewish people really are. And I guess that really brings us to our final point. I'm very fond of studying Chassidus, and I think it's very important. I think it opens a person up to many areas of Torah that they may not be familiar with. But when I saw the following line, I have to say, I took a step back. There's a line that's quoted from Rav Aaron HaGadol of Karlin, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes. And when you hear this line, you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Because this line is, you can see it as very controversial. And I'll share the line with you. He wrote a sefer called Beis Aaron, Rav Aaron of Karlin, and he writes the following. And it sounds almost heretical. Listen to this idea. He said the following. Odamar, he once said, Kol mi sheyesh lo emuna barashbi, anyone who believes in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, already, I don't know about you, but my heart starts to flutter a little bit. The only thing I was ever told to believe in is God. Right? Maybe believe in myself a little bit, but we'll talk about maybe how that fits into believing in God. But since when do we believe in another person? Since when do we believe in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? He was a great tzaddik, he was a very holy individual, he's certainly one of our leaders. But to believe in him, that sounds a little controversial. So he says again as follows, Kol mi sheyesh lo emuna barashmi, anyone who believes in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, it sounds like some other religions, you just gotta believe. Right? Anyone who believes in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, yesh lo chizik b'Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, is strengthened by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The more you believe in him, the more he strengthens you. Right? Again, let's keep going. Kishem she'Hashem yisbarach hu Hashem lakol, just as God exists for all, just as God is the God for every single person, regardless of where you find yourself in life. Kach Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai hu Rashbi lakol. So it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai for everyone. I don't know. I don't know about you, but this line scared me when I first saw it. And it concludes, Afil pachusim, even the lowest Jews. Right? Now again, I've heard of the concept that a low Jew, no matter where he is in life, can always call out to God. That makes sense to me. But this idea of calling out to Rishon Bar Yochai to save me sounds a little bit controversial to me. So how can we perhaps shed some light on this very difficult line from Aaron HaGadol of Karlin? So I think the answer is as follows. This past Shabbos, let's take a look at the first pasuk in this past week's parsha. The pasuk says that Hashem says to Moshe, "Emor el kohanim bnei Aaron, go tell the kohanim, the sons of Aaron, not to become tamei. Don't come into contact. You are of a certain level of holiness. You're not allowed to come into contact with a corpse, with a dead body." The Chassam Sofer reads it, though, in a very interesting way. He says, let's take the pasuk a little slower. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Emor el kohanim b'nei Aaron. Stop. Stop right there. He says, you know what it means? Emor el kohanim, go tell the kohanim b'nei Aaron, that you are the sons of Aaron a Kohen. You know, sometimes as Jews, we forget who we are. Right? We lose sight of who we are, where we come from. And the Kohanim, such righteous people, you would think, would never lose perspective of who they are. They work in the Beis HaMikdash, they're involved in holy things all day. They also need a reminder. Emor el Kohanim, go tell the Kohanim, B'nei Aaron. Remind them who they are. Remind them that they come from one of the greatest Jews of all time, Aaron HaKohen. And the truth is, it's not just a message for Kohanim. The Torah calls us Mamlechas Kohanim, V'gai Kadosh. Right? The entire Jewish people are Kohanim. We are all worthy of the title of Kohen, whether we serve in the Beis HaMikdash in practice or not. We are all, as a people, we are holy people. V'amech kulam tzaddikim. Every Jew has the ability to be a righteous person, to be a tzaddik. And that's exactly the message of Parshas Emor. Emor el Kohanim b'nei Aaron. Tell the Kohanim, you are the sons of Aaron. Remind them who they are. And the reason as Jews why we sometimes sin is because we lose sight of who we are. That's the only reason a Jew would come to sin. There's a beautiful idea from the first Slonim Rebbe. He says a very similar idea based on the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Musar Hashem bini al timas. Right? What does it mean? Simply, Musar Hashem bini, the Musar, the rebuke of God, my son, do not reject. But again, he reads it with a little twist. He says, Musar Hashem, he says, you know what the greatest Musar you could give a Jew is? When a Jew loses sight of what he's supposed to be doing, and he starts getting involved in things that are not really true to his Judaism, you say, Musar Hashem, you know what the Musar is? You know what the rebuke is? You know what the advice is? Bini. You say, my son. You remind him that he's a ben of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You read to him in the Pasuk, Banim Atem LaHashem Elokeichem, that every Jew is a child of God. And that means every single one of us is a prince or a princess to the king of the world. Not just any king, but the king of the entire universe. And now, I think, when we understand that, we can maybe grasp a little bit of what Rav Aaron HaGadol of Karlin was saying. And to do that, we have to look at one final source, the final source on our sheet. The Gemara tells the following story. The Gemara says that the rabbis at one point in Jewish history were very concerned that the Torah would be forgotten. The persecution against the Jews was very severe. And the rabbis say, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos, in source number 10, Tanu Rabbanan, Kishenichnasu Rabboseinu Lekerem B'Yavne, when the rabbis reassembled in the vineyards of Yavne, Amru Asida Torah Shetishtakeach MiYisrael. They literally fear that the Torah would be forgotten forever. Can you imagine such a thing? You know, everyone understands the Jew, right? Everyone understands the Jew lasts forever. But the greatest of rabbis were very afraid that the way things were going, the Torah could be lost forever. Comes along Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, tonight's hero, and he says, no way. I will personally guarantee that the Torah will never be forgotten. Let's take a look. Two lines from the bottom at the very end of the line. Tanya, it was taught in the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai Omer, Chas V'Shalom. God forbid, I will be the personal guarantor that the Torah will never be lost. Chas V'Shalom Shtakeach Torah Mi'Yisrael. Shenemar, what's my proof? The Torah itself guarantees it. The Torah says, Ki lo sishkach mi pizaro. It will not be forgotten from his children. It will never be forgotten. I will be the guarantor. I am taking the full responsibility upon myself to ensure that the Torah will never be lost. And the Svarim tell us that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saw in this pasuk his own personal mission. He saw his own life being alluded to in this pasuk. And if you'll notice, what I did for you in those last few words on the final source, I bolded the last letter of each of the words of the pasuk. Ki lo tishkach mi pizaro. Ki ends in a yud. Lo in an aleph. Tishkach in a ches. Mi pi in a yud and zar in a vav. And if you look at the last letters of the pasuk, it spells out Yochai. It spells out Yochai. He saw in the pasuk, ki lo tishkach mi pizaro. It will never be forgotten from his child. Whose child? The person is alluded to in the pasuk, Yochai. Who's the child of Yochai? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So the Svarim point out, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saw his life's mission in this pasuk. He says, I have the potential to be the guarantor that the Torah will never be forgotten. And based on this, I want to try to say, it's my own original idea, you can tell me if it's any good, but I want to try to explain this pasuk along the same way that the Chassam Sofer explained his pasuk. The Chassam Sofer told us, Emor el Kohanim, tell the Kohanim, b'nei Aaron. Remind them who they are. A Jew needs to be reminded who he is in this world. Let's read this pasuk the exact same way. Ki lo tishkach mipi zara. That a Jew should never forget to say zara. Who's zara am I? Who am I? Who's my father? My father is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem. And when a Jew has on his lips, mipi zaro, if it's constantly on his lips, if he never forgets to say zaro, I am his child, I am the child of the creator of the world, then a Jew will always be able to actualize his potential. And I think that's exactly what Rav Aaron HaGadol of Kalin was saying. What does it mean to believe in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? You're believing in this message of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You're believing that in the Hod Shebahod inside of you, that there's a Kodesh Kadashim inside of you. You're believing that you matter to God, that you can actually bring pleasure to the creator of the world. There was a great Hasidic Rebbe who someone once asked him, how do you sustain yourself? Right? How do you survive? What do you do? Right? Like we said earlier, what do you do? Right? What do you do to provide for yourself? So he says in Yiddish, he said, I have two keys. Key in Yiddish is cow. I have two keys. Okay. So he's got his two cows, maybe he sells some milk. Fine. That's how he makes a meager living. So a while later, this chassid wanted to support his Rebbe. So he came to his Rebbe and he says, listen, you have your two keys, you have your two cows. I'd like to purchase some milk. He says, I don't have any cows. He says, you told me you have two keys, you have two cows. He says, no, that's not what I meant when I said I have two keys. It's true that key in Yiddish means cow. He says, I have two different keys. What are my two keys? He says, my two keys are ki lishuascha kivinu kol yom. Ki lishuascha kivinu kol yom. I long for you, God, all day. I put my faith in you, and that's enough to sustain me. And the pasuk in Tehillim, ki chastecha leneged einai. Those are my two keys. Those are my two sources of sustenance. So I was thinking, you know, what's the main key that we have in our time? And it's the same word in English, so I'm sure my father's thinking. Right? It's the key. What's the key to our success in this world? In this very confusing world that we started with by describing the fires of this world closing in on us. Right? What's the main key that we need to strengthen ourselves in? So you could say, perhaps, we certainly need to remind ourselves about ki b'tzelem Elokim, that every Jew is created in the image of God. There's certainly, we can never stop telling ourselves that. We certainly need to remind ourselves, like we read a few weeks ago, Kadoshim Tiyu, Ki Kadosh, be holy because I am holy, Ki Kadosh, that you can emulate God in this world. But I think if I had to pick our one key, right, the key to our success for tonight, I would say that the main key that a Jew needs to remind himself is the key of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Ki lo tishkach mipi zaro. And when a Jew remembers, if he remembers to say on his lips, Zaro, I am the child of the creator of the world, then it's a guarantee that he will never lose sight of who he is, and he'll be able to actualize his potential. So if I could just conclude with a bracha to everyone, I thank you all for coming. I know the hour is getting a little late, but if I could just conclude and offer some words of bracha on such a special night, we should be zocha to recognize this tremendous depth that we have inside of ourselves, to actualize, to walk into that Kodesh HaKadashim that exists within ourselves. Rav Moshe Wolfson was a great mashkiach, still is, a great mashkiach of Torah Vadas. He says that Lag BaOmer's gematria is the numerical equivalent of Lamala Min HaTeva, to be above nature. To be a little bit bigger than you think you are. As big as we think we sometimes are, we forget that we're really a lot bigger than that. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin that Derech Melech Ein Lo Shir. What it means on a simple level is that the king's path, there's no limits to the king's path. If the king decides, I want to bring my armies right through your field, too bad. You're building a new house, too bad. I'm marching right through. He has to pay you for it, but he can take your house. But I think on a deeper level, Derech HaMelech, when a Jew understands that he's a Melech and he's a Ben Melech, that he's a prince to the creator of the world, Ein Lo Shir. There's no limits of what a Jew can accomplish. So we should all be blessed to actualize his potential, to experience the Hod Shebahod, the glory of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And Amir Tashem, when we have the courage to walk into the Kodesh HaKadashim inside of ourselves, we'll be zochet to see the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash and the Kodesh HaKadashim in Yerushalayim speedily in our days. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Rabbi Weinberg for really beautiful and inspirational words. And again, thank all of you for coming out tonight.